Let's begin the conversation with Mike Wilner, who joins me on the line right now, host of Blue Jays Baseball on the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
Hey, I don't think I've talked to you since the season ended. I wanted to congratulate you on another job well done in 2016. Congrats, and a great season had by you and everybody on the broadcast team as well.
Oh, shucks. Thank you.
No, you're welcome.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, now you get like a little bit of time off. What are the winter meetings are in December, right?
Yeah, I think like the 4th to 8th or something.
Where are they this year?
Washington.
Now Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, first time since the 50s, I think, that they've been in Washington. I don't quite understand why.
I was going to say, like, why? This whole thing is supposed to be a great vacation for everybody in baseball, that you get to go to some warm locale, and it's not likely to be super cold in Washington, but they get a lot of rain, a lot of snow there. They can, at least.
Yeah, no, it's not supposed to be about a nice vacation at a warm locale. It's not the NHL meetings. It's a week of never leaving the hotel, so it doesn't really matter where you are. If you're, if you work in baseball, chances are you've got about an hour of downtime in 4 days. But what it's supposed to be put on by the minor leagues, so it's always supposed to be in a minor league city, which is why we go to Nashville so often for the winter meetings.
Vegas.
I guess there's a single eight Potomac team Washington.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't get why it's in a big league city, although it was in San Diego last year, so I don't know.
So maybe you haven't really thought
first
this one through.
Ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, whatever. Washington's nice. I've been there. But like you said, you can't really do anything outside of the hotel. But it could be real interesting winter meetings for the Toronto Blue Jays because they don't have a lot of question marks, I wouldn't say. I would say the work was that needed to be done was there was a lot more of it that needed to be done in the offseason of 2015. Maybe you disagree with that, but they had to fill three rotation spots, and they got that done. And now they don't have to fill any. Now they do have to do some work corner outfield spots. I can't imagine they're happy with the internal solutions there outside of Kevin Pillar in center field. And depending on what happens to Edwin Encarnacion, they have to fill a first base DH spot, and you'd always like to add some bullpen areas. Am I missing something? And maybe a backup catcher. Am I missing anything, Mike?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, you have to fill half the lineup. Left field, right field, first base, DH, those are all open spots right now. I don't think they see Melvin Upton Jr. or Justin Smoke or Ezekiel Carrera as being an everyday player next year. So it's, four spots in the lineup, a couple in the bullpen, and backup catcher. But, yeah, you this is the first winter that you go into in forever where they're not looking for starting and not desperately looking for starting pitching.
Yeah, can you I can't imagine there's many teams out there that will be in the Blue Jays' position when it comes to starting pitching. Everybody always wants starting pitching. The Blue Jays don't need it.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, assuming that the five guys they bring back all stay healthy, right?
Right.
You're going to need to.
Yeah, you'll need some guys on minor league deals or something.
Right. You're gonna need some backup. And maybe Joe Biagini will be part of that if he's in Buffalo starting. But the way he pitched out of the bullpen, you've got to wonder. I mean, do you just say screw it and have Biagini, Grilly, and Assun at the back of your pen? I don't think you do. I think Biagini has future value as a starter. But yeah, you're going to need some backup. The Blue Jays pitching staff has been miraculously healthy over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
I'm sure they've figured something out. They won't tell us because that's the way baseball works. It's proprietary information. And this is not to cast aspersions only on the Blue Jays. Certainly not. But, why would you want to do something that could help your entire industry stay healthy when you've got a secret and nobody else does? But a few teams seem to have that figured out. We don't know if it's luck. We don't know if what it is. But, 4 or 5 years ago, we were talking about how the Blue Jays suffer more catastrophic arm injuries to their pitchers than any other team in the major leagues, and now he suffered fewer. But we know how quickly it can turn, so you always need insurance. But, yeah, as far as top five starters go, the Jays are absolutely set.
Do you expect any regression? We thought maybe there would be an aggression with Marco Estrada, but I guess we just have to believe that he is what he is now. Is it possible? I mean, anything's possible, but is it likely, maybe more than 50-50, that you don't get quite as much out of J-Hap? I think you can probably expect Marcus Stroman to be better, and then who knows what Aaron Sanchez is. I expect him to be the same if he's throwing 97 and making that start every fifth day. You just look at that rotation. It exceeded expectations by so much, Mike. And you're a little bit wary of saying it's going to come back and be the same thing, because sometimes you do get outlier seasons like that, but you look individual case by case. I think Hap's the only guy that you'd say really, really maybe outperformed what was expected of him.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Well, Sanchez, too, I mean, he won the ERA title in his first year as starting.
Yeah, but you knew that was in him.
Yeah, but to expect it to happen at 24, and also to expect it to continue to happen, maybe, but he's a candidate for regression, certainly. So is J-Hap. Marcus Stroman is a candidate for ascension to the mean.
Mm-hmm.
And so is Francisco Liriano, though not the way he pitched as a Blue Jay. So
right.
I think he kind of took care of that. But, yeah, I think that you absolutely run into trouble. Every team runs into trouble by coming off a great year and saying, okay, well, all these guys are going to be great again. Baseball tends not to work that way, almost no matter who you are.
Right.
So we'll see. I don't think you need to change the rotation at all. I think you go into next season with these five guys, you're fine. But you're going to need more offensive support than you got this year.
Yeah. Before we look at what the Blue Jays can do to improve the offense this offseason, explain what happened to this offense this year to me, Mike, because overall the numbers weren't horrible. They weren't like 15th in the American League in runs scored or whatever, but this was, I don't know, I would say not a great offensive club start to finish. They had a nice little run there, June, July, August, but they struck out a lot. And, it was definitely a different-looking offense than 2015. What did you make of the offense that the Blue Jays put forth in 2016?
I would change one word of that sentence, and I would say they were not a good offensive club start and finish, as opposed to start to finish.
Right.
First quarter of the season, they were terrible offensively. In the last month of the season, they were terrible offensively. And in between, they were really, really good because, you had to be to make up for all the crap that we saw in the 70 games in between where they were terrible. I don't know. I can't explain it. When you look back at the numbers, what pops out is that they were, 24th, 26th in the league with hitting with runners in scoring position.
Yeah.
And that's what it came down to. Leading the league in double plays, I don't think is a big deal, though it does sort of highlight when you hear people say, well, the Blue Jays need to get faster and they need a little bit more speed, that sort of thing. But when you lead the league in double plays, it generally means you get a lot of people on base.
And
that's what the Blue Jays were doing. They just weren't cashing them. They weren't hitting with runners in scoring position. They weren't scoring runs. So, That's really what it came down to, and it's crazy to say about a team that wound up being fifth in the league in runs scored. But for me, that's what it reminded me of. That year, I don't know whether it was 07 or 08, when they had Halliday and Burnett and Markham and McGowan and all that stuff, and they led the league in ERA and hit, I think, under 200 with runners in scoring position and didn't even get within a sniff of the playoffs. I think that's the whole issue. And the problem with that is you can't go out and add hitters who hit well with runners in scoring position, because that's not a thing.
Nope.
You just have to get good hitters, and they have good hitters. But, you know, Troy Tulowitzki had a terrible month to start. Russell Martin had a terrible month to start.
And finish.
Kevin Pillar was hugely up and down all season long.
Yeah.
They always played with a dead spot in the lineup. At one point in the, at any point in the season, there was always at least one dead spot in the lineup, and sometimes there were five, because it was a, it seemed like a real feast or famine year for the hitters. Either they were hitting 400 or they were hitting 100.
Yeah. How do you evaluate this season, Mike? Because, hey, they lose that wild card game. We're having a totally different conversation this team. They won 89 games. Which is not, hey, you'd take 89 wins, you know, if last year doesn't happen and this is your first year in the postseason in 20-some-odd years, that's nice. This team has a lot of weapons. They had an incredible starting rotation. We just touched on it. The ERA that they posted was the best in the American League, not just the starters, the entire team. They only won 89 games, but they were one of the final four teams in the major leagues of baseball in the postseason. But I think you feel the same way I do about the postseason. It's awesome. I love it. And there's things that you can take from it, but the bigger sample size and the easier way to evaluate a team is over 162 games. And the postseason by and large is a crapshoot. And again, one game and the Blue Jays aren't even getting a chance to play the Rangers who they swept. So I look more at the 89 wins during the regular season as the barometer to this team, which is good, but not great, and that there does need to be significant offensive improvements in the offseason. Is that how you evaluate it?
No, I think a season is a success if you make the playoffs. It's a very, very difficult thing to do.
I didn't say it was unsuccessful.
But I mean, I think you look at 89 wins and you say that got you into the playoffs, and there you go. So things went not as well as they could have gone, but certainly well enough to get you where you want to go, because all it comes down to is getting to play once everybody else stops playing. And yes, we expected more. I know we did. I certainly did. And again, you know, I don't know how many times I've said this, but if you told me when spring training broke at the end of March and we went to Montreal or whenever, at any point before the season started, if you'd said to me the Blue Jays are going to lead the American League in ERA this year and the Blue Jays are going to lead the American League in starters ERA by half a run this year, I would have said, "Ah, cool. I'm going to enjoy these 115 wins."
Yeah, right.
You know? Yeah, because that's what should have happened.
Uh-huh.
But you know, it didn't. But they still made the playoffs. And they still made the playoffs with a terrible September.
Yep.
And so despite that, so they gave, they left themselves enough breathing room. And so I think that's when you look back at this season, that's what you say. They made the playoffs. They didn't play as well as we thought they were going to, but they made the playoffs anyway. And in any of the last 23 years, if your first sentence is, "They didn't play as well as we thought they were going to," the next sentence would have been, "Oh, and they finished in last place."
That's right. Talking to Mike Wilner, host of Blue Jays Baseball. I'm Ben Ennis, Sportsnet Today, Sportsnet Radio Network. So how do they go about improving the offense? I the nightmare scenario, and it's one that I would not give much credence to actually taking place, is that Blue Jays go with their internal solutions.
Yeah, that's not happening.
That's not going to happen, but that's bad. But what about the idea of still having, and I heard the guys talk about, I think it was on the Jeff Blair Show, might have been Baseball Central yesterday, about more platoons on this team where that you get a situation like you had this season where players are slumping. You have no choice but to keep playing them because they're your guys, and you play them every day, by and large.
Well, even if you have platoons, you have the same thing, right? If players are slumping. This is the thing. In baseball, it's not so interchangeable, and you should stick with guys through slumps.
Right.
Because they're going to come out of it. But the odds, like we saw this year, of six guys slumping at the same time are pretty high. And if you have a platoon, like this guy plays against righties and this guy plays against lefties, well, he's still going to play against righties even if he's slumping. You're not going to put the other guy in.
Well, unless you believe he can go on a run against the other side or whatever.
But why are you platooning him?
Either way. Okay. So,
but I think you look to the Indians and see what they've done, because that's the team that Mark Shapiro put together. A bunch of good switch hitters, guys who make contact, athletic and speedy guys. And I think that's, you know, you look at, you've got power lefty in Jason Kipnis near the top of the lineup. You've got the switch hitters like Lindor and Ramirez, and guys who can play all over the field, right? Jose Ramirez came up as a shortstop, became an outfielder, then a third baseman. Lonnie Chisenhall was drafted as a third baseman. Now he's a right fielder, that sort of thing. And I think, you know, that combined with great pitching, which the Indians certainly have, and they got Corey Kluber in a trade and Carlos Carrasco in a trade and Trevor Bauer in a trade, I think it's really interesting to see how they've put those things together and how and what kind of team Mark Shapiro wants to have, and to do it with double the budget that he did it with in Cleveland. It'll be very, very interesting. But I think that's where you look. If the Blue Jays are going to acquire players, those are the kind of players that you would think they would like to acquire.
Melvin Upton Jr., does he play against all lefties? Do you think, because he is, whatever you think of Melvin Upton Jr., overall, he's not a great offensive player. He's a pretty good defender and pretty good base runner and all that and got the speed. But against lefties, he is an above-average offensive player. Do you think, as far as, you know, it is still a nightmare scenario, all the replacements, internal solutions, but he's not a bad one against lefties, I would say, Mike.
I would have said that too, but then he was terrible against lefties once he got here. Like, he was just terrible, period, once he got here. And it was only a couple of months and whatever. And he's got, you know, I said the same things about Troy Tulowitzki last year, with the difference that Troy Tulowitzki is an elite offensive player, and Melvin Upton Jr. has been terrible for 4 years. His first half in San Diego was kind of nice. I mean, he did hit 20 homers and steal 20 bases this year, so, you know, he wasn't completely awful, but he was pretty much completely awful once he got to the Jays. And Shai Davidi wrote a column about all the, you know, potential changes and potential moves and whatever, a good look at what the winter may bring. And he wrote in that column that Melvin Upton Jr. only makes $1 million next year. I didn't know, you know, no one released what the contract breakdown was of what the Blue Jays picked up or didn't pick up. So he's absolutely worth having on your team for $1 million.
Yeah.
He can play defense despite the one thing that we saw in Texas. He can run. And he still had an OPS over 100, over 800 against lefties this year, despite what he did in Toronto. So, but then the question is, well, maybe it's because he wasn't playing every day that he was terrible with the Blue Jays, and certainly not going to be playing every day here. So maybe the best thing is to move him and see what you can get. And there are a lot of teams that would be happy with $1 million Melvin Upton Jr., and you might actually be able to get something for him. So we'll see how that works out in the offseason.
Where do you see Dalton Pompey in the mix here, Mike? Because we haven't seen him even as a pinch hitting solution. Like, well, obviously he's not going to pinch hit for anybody, but the Blue Jays weren't even comfortable enough with him as a defensive replacement. Like, when he was on rosters, it was still Ezekiel Carrera replacing Jose Bautista in right field, even though Dalton Pompey used to be an elite defender. I imagine it's still in there, despite the fact that the last time we saw him at the major league level, he seemed to be all up in his head. The minor league numbers, they don't jump off the page at you. They're about a 700 OPS, but he gets on base pretty well. He just has no power. There's speed there. He gets caught stealing a bunch. A lot of caught stealings this year in the minor leagues. Where do you see the Blue Jays going with Dalton Pompey?
It's a good question. I don't know, because I'm not sure what this front office thinks of Dalton Pompey. I know that the previous front office wasn't in love with Dalton Pompey either, after the beginning of last season. But, you know, when we talk about what kind of players the Blue Jays want, young, fast, athletic, switch hitters, that's Dalton Pompey. So if they like him, you would think he would get an opportunity, and maybe he gets to come to camp to try to win a job as an everyday outfielder next year, whether it's in left field or right field. Maybe he gets traded. I think those are the two potentials for Dalton Pompey this winter. I think either he comes to camp with a legitimate chance to win a job and play every day in the major leagues, or they deal him for something they like better.
Joe Biagini as a starter, in my mind, that ship has sailed so entirely because he was so incredible as a reliever. And I get it. A lot of starters, if you threw him in short stints out of the bullpen, would be spectacular. We get so over ourselves about Zach Britton's season as a reliever. You don't think Chris Sale would be like the greatest reliever in the history of baseball if he got to throw, you know, 30 pitches or less per outing? I get that. But the starter numbers were not that great in the minor leagues, and Blue Jays have turned him into a very valuable asset with this team. Do you think they do go back to stretching him out, seeing what he has as a starter, or are they just happy with found money?
No, I think they look at him as a starter. I do. I think, you know, it's the sort of Aaron Sanchez argument. Where do you get your most value out of him? And I think that with his pedigree as a starter, with the innings he's thrown in the past, I know he wasn't a great starter, but I think this guy can be a starting pitcher, and that's always more valuable than being your third reliever, right? So even though he was wonderful, I mean, the splits weren't great. Lefties really got to him. Nobody hit for power off of him, but you know, left-handers hit like 290 with a 350 on base against him.
Yeah.
I think you owe it to yourself to take a look and see what he can do for you as a starting pitcher, because if you're going to get 200 solid innings out of Joe Biagini, I would take that over a guy who's being my seventh inning guy 1,000 times out of 1,000.
Even though he would be the sixth starter.
Well, who knows, right? All it takes is one little tweak to somebody.
Right, but you...
But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I this is all assuming no trades are made.
But you're not looking at your sixth starter for 2017. You're looking at a guy who...
Yeah, but you still have to play 2017.
Forever.
Yeah, but you still have to play 2017, and you're trying to win a World Series, we figure, yeah, in 2017. And as much as I like the idea of him being a candidate to be in a rotation at some point, you can't. I think it's a dangerous game to play if he's just sitting in AAA waiting for somebody to get hurt.
You need that. That's something that a team absolutely needs.
They didn't need it this year.
They got lucky, very lucky, and they got lucky last year. You certainly can't. I mean, you can't go into a season saying, "Well, we were able to get through an entire year using seven starting pitchers this year." So chances are that's going to happen again.
Yeah, but
we don't need any insurance.
How many? Not a lot of teams have like viable, potential great starting pitchers in the major leagues just sitting there in AAA, though, as well, Mike. And you hope that eventually one of these guys, Connor Green or somebody, eventually takes a step forward and becomes an option at the major league level.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that you already know that Joe Biagini, like, I'd have no problem with Joe Biagini being the eighth inning guy next season. He was that good, and they still have Jason Grilley coming back. To take that away from this team, you're opening up a new hole for the potential of Joe Biagini is, and like, what's his upside? Is he going to be an ace of this staff? I mean, that seems unlikely.
He could be a viable mid-rotation starting pitcher, and that's something that's a lot more valuable than a seventh inning reliever.
Agreed.
And that's what Joe Biagini is. He's your seventh inning reliever, maybe. I mean, if Jason Grilley's going to come back and Roberto Osuna's going to come back, you go out and who knows, maybe you bring back Joaquin Benoit for a little unfinished business action and see if he can be as dominant as he was in the month and a half, the 2 months that he was here. Or you give a shot to one of your big arms on the way up, whether it's Tapera or Schultz or Chris Smith or Danny Barnes or something. I'll take any of that plus the chance to have Joe Biagini become a viable mid-rotation major league starter than giving up on Biagini as a starter and saying, all right, you're my third guy out of the bullpen.
Yeah, to me he's like the second guy out of the bullpen. But yeah, it's an interesting conversation to have. I'm sure you'll have it, if it is a thing that's happening, you'll have it for like a month at the end of February and through
we'll
March.
We'll have it all spring training, depending on, you know, whether we see Biagini starting a game in the spring or not.
It'll be Aaron Sanchez redux, because, man, we couldn't get enough of that, right?
A little different, but obviously because, you know, Sanchez had both top of the rotation stuff and closer stuff, but
yeah.
And Biagini has neither, but so it'll be a little different, but the same sort of conversation, yeah.
I don't know. He doesn't have closer stuff? He pitched like one of the best relievers in the American League.
No, I didn't.
He was pretty damn good. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
He was pretty good.
All right. Let's tackle the big fish here, the offseason.
Let's just go over. I mean, one of the best relievers in the American League. He had a WHIP of 1.3.
That's pretty.
He gave up more than a run per inning, and he struck out fewer than one per inning. So that's not even
more than
a
hit.
Best relievers.
A hit per inning. You said run per inning. He didn't have any ERA over
nine. More than a hit per inning. Yeah, more than a hit per inning, and didn't strike out a batter per inning. So it doesn't really even put him in a conversation for one of the best relievers in the league.
Okay, one of the best Rule 5 pickups in the league.
Ever.
Ever in the history of baseball. Well, not ever either.
Top 10 Blue Jay Rule 5er. Top 5
George
Blue Jay
Bell.
Rule 5er.
Yeah, all right. It's okay. Yeah, top 10
Maybe
Blue
Jay. Top 5 Blue Jay Rule 5er.
Okay, all right, we'll go that far. All right, so we got it. We haven't... This is ridiculous. We've been talking for 20-some-odd minutes. We haven't talked about Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion. Let's talk.
That's all anybody's been talking about, though.
I know.
It's nice that you want to touch on all the other things.
Yeah. There'll be time to touch on everything, and I'm sure it's not the last conversation we'll have this offseason about all of this. And certainly when they sign, wherever they sign, we'll have the conversation again. I wonder what Jose Bautista's market is. It's hard to tell season by season. It certainly changes. I mean, there's one bad GM out of the woodwork now that Dave Stewart was fired in Arizona, so maybe that changes things a little bit. But maybe somebody thinks Jose Bautista is still a viable corner outfielder for 150 games. I still think he has offensive skills, and I don't expect him to be what he was this year. Injuries were such a big part of his season, I think. But, man, I think anything close to, you know, a 4 or 5 year deal and $100 million is just dreaming for him. What is it possible? Like, are the qualifying offer of what is it, 17 point something million on a 1 year deal? He's not sticking around for that, probably, right?
I can't imagine that he does. It may be his best business decision to do that, and that's the thing. Jose Bautista is very much a businessman, but he's also a very proud guy, and so I think that. I don't see an intersection between those two things. I don't think that Jose Bautista, given the fact that he is Jose Bautista, would ever look at a qualifying offer and say, yeah, that's, you know what, it's a smart thing for me to do, stay in Toronto, build my value, go back out on the market for the next year after a great year and see what happens. I think, and it's really sad to say, because Jose Bautista has been maybe the most elite slugger of this decade in Major League Baseball, he is never going to get a huge contract if that ship has sailed.
Yep.
You know, it started too late in his career, and he signed a very good deal with the Blue Jays, a very good risk for both teams, a gamble that paid off huge for the Jays. He seriously outperformed that contract. But this year came at the worst possible time because those two freak injuries, yeah, they were absolutely freak injuries, but you know what? When you're 35, it seems like it's a little more likely to have freak injuries. He's 36 now, and I can't see a team giving him 4 years. I can't see a team giving him even $20 million a year, never mind 25, coming off of a season like this. So I think he gets the qualifying. I'm sure he gets a qualifying offer from the Blue Jays.
Yep.
And maybe the best offer he gets is like 2 years plus an option that works out to about $45 million.
Yeah, which I mean it's doubly difficult to receive once you've been qualified as well, because that team's giving up a draft pick for him as well. He might be well served to maybe not accept the 1 year qualifying offer from the Jays, but maybe they can figure something out, not unlike what they did with Marco Estrada, where it was a 2 year deal after they qualified him. But the average was for less than a qualifying offer per year with Estrada. I mean, I don't know. If you're the Blue Jays, do you even want to invest that much money in a Jose Bautista who appears to be on the decline?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. And it's crazy to say because, you know, going into this season, I would have been fine with a 4 year, $100 million deal for him.
Yeah.
And now, but that's, you know, that's what we believe has happened to his market. I don't think he can get 350 out on the open market guaranteed coming off a year like this. Not that it was such a terrible year, but that it was a year where a 35-year-old Jose Bautista didn't play in 100 games, and the batting average went into the toilet, but, you know, the on-base was still there, and the power's not quite what it was, but still good.
Yeah.
And all his prorated numbers over 162, I mean, would have driven in 100 runs, scored 100 and all that stuff, but just, it's the age. It's
yep.
the age and the injury, and I just can't see it happening, but Jose Bautista, I know, has a feel for the market. I'm sure his agent does. I think that they know what people might be willing to offer him and what roles teams might have for him. And I do wonder if Jose doesn't accept a two-year deal for less average annual value than the qualifier from somebody else, just so that he doesn't have to. You know, I wonder if he sees accepting a qualifying offer as sort of coming back with his tail between his legs. I can see him thinking like that and not wanting to do it just for that reason. I don't think that that's valid at all, but I can see that happening.
All right, before we let you go, give me an odds. Joey Votto's in a Blue Jays uniform opening day next season.
I would say not good. I don't think that this current administration wants this team to get older. I think that they're, you know, I would suggest that most of the acquisitions, if the Blue Jays are going to make trades, most of the acquisitions they make, other than potentially for short relief pitching, are for players who are under 30. So I would love to see Joey Votto here. If I was running this team, Joey Votto would have been here in July. Because that's what they needed, another left-handed bat, and it was in a slot that they could put him in, and would have helped a ton. But I don't think that's the direction that this team is going. And let it be said, I'm not running this team. Joey Votto was not here in July, and they still were one of the
yep.
two last teams standing in the American League.
So what was that, 10%?
Yeah, maybe less.
All right. We'll put you down for 10%. Thank you, Michael.
Okie dokie.